Let's begin, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for being here. My name is Christophe Bourrion. I'm the Executive Director of the World Federation of Science Journalists. When politics and science collide, should science journalists pick a side? This session is actually the first of a series of meetings and workshops that the Federation will be hosting in various regions, various countries of the world, on ethics and science journalists. And as you can see from the seating arrangement, and as our moderators will explain in a minute, the format of the session is quite different from what we've seen so far at the conference. To drive this event, we are fortunate to have two esteemed members of our community. We have Kai Kupf. I knew it. For a Frenchman, it's difficult. We have Kai Kupferschmidt. He's Kai. Kai is a science journalist based in Berlin. He's a contributing correspondent for science. He covers infectious diseases and a range of issues, including biotechnologies, drug developments, and science policy. Kai, he's written for numerous German publications, including Die Zeit. And he's also written two books, and his last book on the color blue, about the science of color blue, has just been published, and we're very happy that Kai took some time off from his book signing tour to be with us. Peter is an all-round science communicator. Peter is based in Amsterdam. And until 2006, Peter was a science reporter, writing for various Nature journals and Dutch newspapers and magazines. Since 2009, he's been running a communication company that often works on the interface between science and society. And lively debates are also a key part of Peter's portfolio. Gentlemen, the meeting is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Christophe. I noticed that you didn't even try to pronounce Peter's surname, so I'm going to let you say it, Peter. I'm not going to try either.
It's called Vermeij.
That? So,
don't even try.
Well, so Peter is going to explain to you in a minute how we're going to have this debate and what's up with this weird seating arrangement. But before he does, I thought I'd give a quick introduction into the topic. So you're here to have a little crash course on journalism ethics. And when I say crash course, I mean that literally, because we want to talk today about what happens when science and politics collide. What should journalists do? Should we just watch, maybe call an ambulance? Should we run away? Should we pick sides? To illustrate a little bit what we mean by science and politics colliding, I've brought just a few examples from recent months. Thank you. So if you've been following the news, you have plenty of examples to pick from. This is one from, from Brazil. Brazil's foreign minister says climate change is a Marxist plot. Of course, climate change is everyone's favorite collision topic at the moment. But it's far from the only one, and Brazil is far from the only country. We have an example from right here in Hungary. Hungary bans gender studies because it is an ideology, not a science. There's a lot to debate there, including that we have used Fox News as an example of journalism, but that's something else we can talk about. And then, of course, the US. Lots of examples from the US, whether it's about what words scientists are allowed to use, or whether it's everybody's favorite affair, Sharpiegate. I don't know whether you remember this. This was when Donald Trump, the meteorologist-in-chief of the US, amended the hurricane projections to include Alabama. And it basically all leads to headlines like this. Trump administration's war on science has hit crisis point, experts warn. This basically translates into experts warn that experts' warnings aren't being taken seriously. Now, what does it mean for science journalists? What does it mean for us in our role? What should we be doing in a case like this? That is what we want to discuss here today. Just one note quickly, we are being live streamed by the conference organizers, so just that you know, whatever you say can and will be given into evidence. And with that, Peter.
You don't like this one?
No, I need that one.
All right, so
You have noticed that you are arranged in a strange seating arrangement, and that's no coincidence. It is made to resemble this particular room in London, or maybe there's similar ones in Canada, New Zealand, anywhere. So it is the House of Commons. So the House of Commons is a very old building, and this particular seating arrangement came to be because it started off in a chapel, and there were these seats in the chapel, and people used those. And actually, in the end, people thought, well, this actually works very well, because there's people on the one side and there's people on the other side, and they don't agree with each other, so they look at each other, they look each other in the eye. So that is something we are going to use here, because we think that helps in debating this issue. I'll make a few comparisons. Does it still work? Yeah. I make a few comparisons to the actual House of Commons. One is very important. We are not voting here. I mean, in the actual House of Commons, people adopt laws and vote on stuff. We are just debating. So wherever you sit, there's no decisions being made today. So you can see it as a discussion among friends, but no votes. So the division. I'm not sure whether any one of you has ever watched a real House of Commons debate in the Brexit era, but there you have divisions, and if people want to vote, they walk out of this chamber and they go to separate chambers, to whether in chamber A or chamber B, they vote yes or no. Here we vote in this particular room. Crossing the aisle, that's rarely done in the UK, and maybe you have seen it in the Brexit debate. Someone actually did that. They basically crossed the aisle to the other side during a debate. That's highly unusual in the actual House of Commons. We encourage it. So if at some point later in this discussion, and I'll explain how it works, but if you feel crossing the aisle is what you want to do, please do so. Here in the House of Commons, you have to say yes or no, or you can abstain. Here we have three chairs of the clerks, and you can use those later on if you think, well, I'm not sure whether I'm for or against a certain law or motion. Then we have three seats reserved where you can sit and think about it and listen to the people making arguments. And so then the only price for that is that after debate has been there, we'll ask you, what did you hear? Were you swayed in any particular direction? So you'll see how it works when we start. And a few other rules. We will be holding the microphones. So that means that if you have to speak, you have to signal us, basically, I want to say something. So just wink or make sure that one of us sees you, so we know that you want to make a statement. Because the ideal House of Commons is that everyone, at the end of this session, will have spoken. So we hope you all will, at some point, feel the urge of also saying something. So the official rule in the actual House of Commons is that there cannot be applause, and that maybe explains why they have tried this hear, and boos. And just for the fun of it, I would like to try you to try the hear. So if I say something that you totally agree with, you say
hear.
Very good. And if you think I said something that's really dreadful, you say all right. So this gives us some idea of how a real debate looks like. So in a real house, no guns are allowed, but humor is encouraged, and we have adopted that same rule. So please use. It's also a bit of fun. I mean, that's one of the good things about a House of Commons debate. People inject humor all the time, and we like that. So please do. And final rule is we will really not let go of our microphones. So usually it happens that people, by reflection, just try to grab the microphone. We will hold on to them, because it means that if you talk too long, we will basically end your discussion and we will move on to someone else. So just that you know what's going to happen.
Perfect. And with that, we are on to the first motion. I will just read it for you. Have you seen or reported on a collision between politics and science? Now, first of all, this is the no side, this is the yes side, and while you choose which side is the right one for you and move, I will explain a little bit in case you're still wondering. So we are not going to give a definition of what a collision is or what it isn't. In the end, whatever you think is a collision, the words mean whatever you want them to mean in this case. Maybe you've reported on a government going against against scientific advice. Maybe you have given scientific advice to a government and it hasn't listened. Whatever you feel, whether you've been involved or whether you have reported on a collision, if you have, this is your side, the yes side. If there are no chairs left, feel free to stand. And we still have, well, I mean, I guess you should know whether you have reported or not, but if you're in doubt, you can sit here. Okay. Yeah, exactly. When you move, take your purse and everything with you. Okay. You want to take the yes side? You want to take the no side?
Well, I mean, the most important thing is here that we want to hear from people who actually have felt they witnessed something. So who can I ask, when you went to sit here, why was that? What were you thinking of at that moment?
Do you want to keep? Okay. I don't like it. I really don't like it. So can you?
Okay. All right. Okay. So someone else is interested? Okay.
There is an example of our Prime Minister in Jordan, I'm from Jordan, not listening to scientific advice and deciding to pump water from an oasis in the eastern desert to the capital, an oasis that's been there for thousands of years, used by migratory birds coming from Northern Europe down to South Africa, and destroying, in a simple decision, that oasis, and 20 years on, discovering that he's made a terrible mistake. That has been one of the environmental disasters that I've witnessed and I felt very sad about.
And in your remembering, did he ignore scientific advice, or did he just think he knew better, or what happened?
He thought he knew better, but he was the sort of politician who did not understand or take kindly to science-based advice, and decided that I'm not going to listen to the science community giving me that advice.
All right.
Great. Who wants to go next? Yes. I'm keeping hold of the microphone.
Okay, good. So I went to the Royal Society Chemistry Toxicology workshop, and there was a data to say that the pollution in London was really bad, but the report were not coming out because burning the car, something in London, is not something to, you know, that's not something that the pollution would support. So that was many years ago, and it's only recently that they start changing the policy that they start banning some kind of diesel car there, so that yes, there is a conflict between politics and science, and also that people taking the bus will have a less pollution than people taking the tube, because this will be very polluted inside, but that's also not very clearly communicated.
So the scientists actually wrote a report and then they didn't publish it, or what exactly?
Yeah, this was many, well, I don't know exactly how many years, I had to look at my diary, but when the report was saying, because I was participant in the scientific workshop, and they say that, you know, this is the data, but it's not going to come, it's not going to be going out in the public.
I guess I'm just asking, did the scientists censor themselves, or did the politicians censor them?
It wasn't very clear to me at that point who censored what, but definitely that there was data enough to say that, you know, the pollution is bad, but I kept like feeling guilty, didn't come up to say to them, you know, hey, why don't we find some way to get it out, but, you know, I'm selfishly protecting myself going to the side street.
Okay, thank you very much. Who else wants to talk about their experience? Yes.
Hi, I'm doing wireless communication in research, so I like to use the conflict between Donald Trump and Huawei on 5G. Okay. So I wrote an article about that, but then I explained, you know, what motivates the, but not really motivate, but what caused the conflicts.
But what's the collision between the science and the politics? What's the science part of it?
The science part is the development of 5G.
And do you feel like that collision, has it been solved in one way or the other? Who won?
It start to become slow down. Yeah.
Perfect.
the Donald Trump administration make a U-turn.
Okay, I have one here.
Yep.
Completely different setup. I'm thinking about, you know, the fundamental differences about how science operates and how politics operates. Because in science, we're following evidence. At least in a democracy, politics is based on majorities, which is a completely different way of arriving at a conclusion. It also causes problems. If scientists then start crossing the divide and act as politicians and no longer as scientists, and that also has the danger that this corrupts science.
You mean sometimes politics act like scientists, but it's also the other way around.
Yep.
Okay, that's a clever thought. There's one in the corner.
Federico, you're sitting in the wrong chairs. You know that, right?
I know. I'm Federico Cux. I'm from Argentina. I usually write there, now in Argentina. There's a big debate about abortion. The problem it is that, for example, the Pope is from Argentina, and he has a lot to do what's going on in the Congress. On the Congress, they are not making decisions based on evidence. For example, the evidence regarding about this subject said by the World Health Organization, and the politician are mostly fundamental religious. So that's the problem, the political problem there. They don't respect the evidence.
And you, as a science journalist, do you get involved in that? Do you write about it?
Yeah, I write about that. I usually report about facts, the evidence, what the evidence says, about what the scientific community in Argentina says, that they are totally agree with the abortion, to avoid the death of many people.
Do you try to talk to the Pope as well for balance?
That's a problem. That's a key issue there. It's a false balance. I mean, why a religious figure has to do with a matter of social health, even in Argentina, that's a secular country.
Right. Thank you.
I have one here, and then the next one's over there.
Yeah.
I'm Jens Kitt from Denmark. I have a big pile of stories, but I'll pick one. I wrote a story to the Euroscientist about the fact that in Denmark, they installed a program on all medical doctors' computers. The one they report on illnesses and all their reportings to the pharmacies about what medicine to take. And this system, after running 7 years, somebody found out that it actually collected all the data from all the patients in Denmark, which had individual personal numbers that could be identified. And all this data was given to one community which actually sold it to the medical industry without telling the doctors or anybody, nor the patients. So every information you told your doctor during this 7 year period was secretly going to a database and given to industry.
And you think that was a political decision? I mean, where it was the collision between the politics and the science in this story?
In many ways, it was a political decision to make up the system, and it was a political decision to sell the data for research, and it was also a political decision to cover up for it afterwards and try to keep the data. They actually wanted to keep it in the National Archive in order to make sure that it could be used at some time. It shouldn't be lost, because all the medical doctors and patients, they were an uproar against this story, of course.
Okay,
we have another example here. Vera, you're a science journalist too. What was the collision you were involved in?
Our politicians like to use or pretend to use science when they are making some proposals of law. And I can speak about using cannabis as a medicine, or restricting the use of drugs for hyperactivity disorder. So they build a proposal of law pretending to have many scientific background on that. So I was asking scientists, was it true or not? It was mostly effect checking. So this is, they pretended to use science, but actually it was not scientifically valid.
That's interesting. So you're saying that they're not explicitly going against the science, they're actually pretending to be, they're actually using science, pretending that it's on their side?
Yes, they use the parts of the science, they cherry pick they use the parts of the science that they are more interesting for them. They did the same with the alternative medicines. They picked the things that they wanted to build a law on that, and they pretended to be sane.
And what do you do as a science journalist in those cases? You write a fact check and basically write that that's not true, that the science says something else.
Yes, that's basically.
Perfect.
Okay, another example here.
So I'm a French science journalist, and I'm writing a story right now about whether it's safe or not to spray pesticides next to houses, which is a debate in France. And there's a lot of epidemiological data that says that people who live close to agricultural fields develop certain diseases in higher numbers than people who are further out. So the French Institute, I mean the big research institute for health in France, which is called INSERM, has published a report pointing that out. But the government says it's safe. And what's interesting here is that in this collision between politics and science, it's also a collision between different bodies within science, because in France we have a regulatory agency which contradicts what the health agency says, and they say their data shows that it's safe to spray close to houses. So they're shifting right now, but what I want to contribute here is that sometimes in this collision between politics and science, politics influences certain agencies, and here it's the Ministry of Agriculture that funds this agency, so obviously it weighs in on how they judge the science.
Yes. Important.
There's
point.
Two people on that side, far end.
Let's start here.
So I'm not a journalist, but I changed my mind because I realized that there are science journalists in the room. I'm a Hungarian researcher, and some of you might have heard that the entire network, the entire research network of the Hungarian Academy of Sciences was confiscated by the government. So I'm not witnessing, I'm living in under these conditions. And earlier this year, before the final decision, I also wrote two, not really opinion pieces, but sort of opinion pieces in two different Hungarian weeklies, political, economic political weeklies, about the lack of any, not sensible, but any argument, any analysis why the research network should be taken away from the academy, why it would be useful, why it would be beneficial for the country or for anyone.
What was the reaction to the pieces you published?
My colleagues, my friends, my family members liked it. The government tends to ignore all sorts of argument. So they only feel comfortable in the world of politics, not in policy discussions.
I'm curious, the weeklies where you published it, are they these weeklies where you feel people with maybe a different opinion might have read it, or is it basically part of your bubble?
I'm afraid it's part of my bubble.
Yes.
So I was the science editor of the largest Hungarian daily for 25 years, since until 2016 when it was closed. It was like the Süddeutsche in Germany.
The science section was closed, or the whole newspaper?
The whole newspaper, because it was a strongly opposition paper. So I had a lot of stories, but I will tell you two. Do you know that in Hungary, the GMO ban is built into the constitution, like the same-sex marriage? So that is one thing. I wrote a lot of editorial against that due to scientific basis. The other thing, in Hungary, a whole discipline was pushed and destroyed due to the, I don't know if you remember of that story, the Visegrad Nagymaros Dam story. It was starting in the 90s, maybe Peter remember that. That was a dam between Slovakia and Hungary on the river, and that was closed in Hungary, and this is a lot of big international story. So the whole hydrology, it destroyed like a discipline in Hungary, and a very well-renowned Science Research Institute of Hydrology was totally closed. The building is still empty on the south bank of the river in Budapest. So it is a long history of different kind of punishment of science disciplines or science evidences in the Hungarian history. It is not new, like in the gender study, what you mentioned. I could tell hours, but that's enough.
Okay, I have one more over here. We should all keep these examples in our heads, because for the following up questions, these could serve as a basis for our discussions.
Hi, I'm from Russia, so I have a number of reasons to be on this side. but one thing I'd like to highlight is that the Russian government's policy when it comes to HIV/AIDS is not based on evidence-based medicine and the methods that are that probably work, and the government actually persecutes the NGOs that try to implement needle exchanges, methadone therapy, and things like that. I have a report on that. So that's a major issue.
Thank you. Well, it shows that the debate is apt and very, we can use a debate on this subject because stuff is going on. Is there one final example we can include? I want to go to this side for one moment, and people saying, okay, we have not seen or reported on something. Is there something you think, okay, well, maybe I haven't looked close enough, or am I, is someone interested in saying, adding something to the discussion on this side? If not, well, we'll just move on to the following motion. And this is just an example of something that's recent. This is earlier last week, and it doesn't say anything, but it's just an introduction to our next question. And it's basically a case, it's a scenario. And the scenario says that there is an expert committee that advises a government to triple its funding for Alzheimer's research. And a science journalist writes a news story about their report. So, well, this is going on all the time. I mean, you can see these stories in the newspaper all the time. The question is, where will the money come from? And so, with that in mind, should such a story always include critical comments from scientists in other fields? Because that will probably be where the money is coming from. And so this is where politics and science start to come together. And well, just see where we end. If you think yes, this should always be in a story about this money flow, then you go sit on that side. If you think no, you should just report on the fact that these experts, which are probably Alzheimer experts, have advised this. We should just report that and end the discussion there.
Yes. So. We'll give you a few seconds to make up your mind and go to one side or the other. There's also still the three chairs in the middle if you really can't make up your mind.
Sometimes we have a little music here, but yes. We're this time.
Yeah. Yes, and if you're not sure, also feel free to just try out one of those opinions. Sometimes it helps to just go to one side and see how comfortable you feel there. So this side is the yes side. It should always include critical comments from people in other fields. This side is the no side. Just report on what the expert committee says. Okay, I think everyone's where they want to be. Can we just curious to have a show of hands. Where are the science journalists? Who are the science journalists? Okay, there's a clear pattern amongst those.
Okay, well, who wants to explain why they're sitting where they are sitting? I'm curious. So you don't think that should go into the story?
I think there's a third point here, because I wouldn't speak to scientists from other fields because they would be biased because they want the money, of course. But maybe I wouldn't stick only to the scientists that are Alzheimer researchers. Maybe I would talk to other people. I don't know now, but to other people that could have a more independent view on this funding, besides the scientists from the other fields that would want the money.
Okay, I'm trying to understand you correctly. So you're not talking to scientists from other fields because of their bias, but you are talking to the Alzheimer researchers in this.
Or maybe not, but if I wanted an independent view, if I wanted an independent view, I wouldn't be talking to scientists from other fields of expertise. I would be talking with someone else besides the Alzheimer guys and the scientists from the other fields.
Okay, clear enough. Okay, clear. Yeah, maybe you can. There are still empty seats in the middle. So, okay, I'm gonna pick up one here.
Okay, the word which is keyword in this question is always. Should such a story always? Yeah? And I think not always. It depends what story is about. It is just a news that they advise it, then you just wrote the news. If it's an article, if it's an in-depth article, then you will call other science to comment it. And if you're talking about Alzheimer, then you will talk about only Alzheimer scientists. Or if it's the story about the money that government is giving, then you will talk about scientists that are gaining money and scientists that are don't getting money from the government. So
but if you write the news story in which you said I don't have to go to another field, who would you quote? Would you quote the chair of the committee, who would probably be an Alzheimer researcher?
If expert committee advise a government, they would probably do it in a letter or something that the report, yeah, and then you will quote a report, and then next day, you will maybe do in-depth story, more follow up on that. I say it depends from the space you have and everything, and that's why the key is always.
Yeah, that is there in there for a reason. But
I'm curious what this side thinks. So first of all, there were, I think, two science journalists here. Do you want to explain your thinking first, maybe?
Yeah, sure. So I guess this is just my whole background as a Russian science journalist. So I'm trying to, whenever I see a story like this, I'm trying to poke holes in the decision in the rationale behind the decision. I'm trying to look for reasons for this to be advised. So as a journalist, I'm obviously not an expert in the state of Alzheimer's research. So I'll have to ask some people who are maybe following from the outside to give me a bit of a perspective on how this money will be spent ultimately, whether it will give the return. And the other thing is,
I mean, the question is about asking scientists who are not Alzheimer researchers, right? Why would you ask those?
I guess you could just call it like a reflex, maybe something. I'm just looking for. Like you said in the setup of this question, the money has to come out of somewhere. I want to hear what those people who are losing this money would think.
Right. What would the other people do if they had the money?
Yeah. I have a scientist here.
Yes.
Just for
balance.
Yeah, that's an important point. I was going to start with that point. I'm not a journalist, so therefore I might definitely I don't know the rules of the news story. So there are different genres. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Oh, we have a defector. keep talking.
Because, so what I was thinking about, not the news story itself in its narrow constraints, but a sensible article for readers. And in that case, I would include other life scientists who are also working on equally important fields, important issues. And probably also funders. It can be the Ministry of Finance, it can be the NHS in the UK context. So I would gather different opinions why that certain field, a given field of research should be prioritized.
If you read, open up the newspaper and you read a story saying, okay, Alzheimer researchers want three times the amount of money, and you're not in the Alzheimer field. What do you think? What's your response to that?
Yeah, that my response would be that I would need the opinion of different stakeholders, including life science researchers, not necessarily physicists, because it might not make sense. But as I said, funders, patients, organizations, so all the interested parties.
Okay. I always, when there's a defector, I always have to check. First of all, how many years have you been a science journalist now?
21.
And yet, with this question, you just changed your mind?
I change my mind all the time.
Your poor family, that must be hard for them. What made you change your mind?
So
I was thinking about what Olga was saying, and I would have to figure out what people from other fields, but fields very nearby, think of Alzheimer research. Like, why I would go to Parkinson researchers and say, how are the Alzheimer people doing? Do you think they will do better if we triple their funding? Or are they maybe stuck into some place where funding doesn't really matter? They have something else that they have to solve? I don't know. But I mean, basically, for a story like that, which involves funding, you would go to see other stakeholders, but you would need a scientific point of view on Alzheimer from a slightly different perspective. So I would take a field close by, but not exactly.
And how often do you think that's actually done in science journalism? I mean, in France, I'm curious, like when you read a story like this, does it usually happen? What percentage of stories would include?
Not that many, but if you happen to know someone, and after 21 years, you end up knowing quite a lot of people.
If your husband is a Parkinson researcher, you might write it.
Maybe just a source, but yeah.
Okay, I have one here.
Yes.
I have you. I'm going over here.
I want to bring Eve back over here, so I think I can do that. So the problem that you've set up is kind of classic horse race journalist: who wins, who loses. It's politics, science. If it's science, you shouldn't think of it that way. You should think of it: what is the real basis for this argument that they're making for more money? Has their funding been stripped? Is the private sector not stepping up? Are they under huge patient influence and there's a big political push? So those questions cannot be answered by the scientists, and those are the questions that I think as the journalist you have to go answer. It's not always the scientists who have the answer to your questions.
So you would go see other people, but not necessarily the cancer researchers.
I think this is not a science story, it is a politics story, and you really need to understand what's behind it and what is the weight of their evidence behind the recommendation.
Here.
Okay, anyone else on this side?
That has not worked, though, to get Eve back.
Okay,
yeah.
So let's look at what the role of these scientists would be. If they speak as a scientist, they're not the right people because they're not expert in the field. If they want to make a political argument, why should we use the scientists or not anyone else? And there's a bit the notion that, oh, the other scientists have a vested interest because the money would be taken away from him. Actually, why? I'm an astronomer. I would like, if an expert committee says more money should be for Alzheimer's research, great. Take the money off the defense budget.
Hold on, I'm with you.
Sorry, why would you assume that they're taking the money from somebody else?
Well, that's usually what happens. I'm telling you now.
No.
Well, I'm saying the sum is fixed, so I mean, yeah, the sum is fixed.
That's usually how government operates, that they have a budget and they have to carve it up, basically.
So not necessarily have to take it from other scientists, they have to. They may take it from other fields.
Defense, again.
Okay, let's hear from this side.
Can I add something to it? Actually, I think when the money comes in, it's not about only the Alzheimer's research, it's about the money. And can I tell you an example from Hungary? I'm from Hungary. That now, when this academic things goes on, that the research institutes from the academy are taken away by the government. Now it's going out to the point that the researches on science, social sciences and politics are taken away, are not getting enough money in the future. All the money is going to go to the physicists, to the mathematicians. And about this, mainly the scientists know.
Curious, why do you think that is? Why does the government make that decision?
I think on the other side they can tell you much more.
Sorry, you think what?
It's told in the science circles in Hungary.
No, I mean, but why are they putting the money into mathematics and physics instead of social science?
Because the social science has critics on the government.
Okay, I have one here. Sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry to say that, but your question is
a false problem here.
That's always the case.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you ask experts from other fields, their comments would be irrelevant. You would have to find independent experts from the same field to discuss critically the report which was made by the expert committee.
So you would go look for Alzheimer researchers who say we don't need extra money?
Actually, I would find independent experts and see what they say. I am interested in a critical point of view, but maybe they will sustain this. Anyway, if Parkinson, like Yves said, Parkinson's researcher would say something different, it's not because the Alzheimer would not need three times the money, but because they think Parkinson needs needs also more money. So by this, you're not actually answering the Alzheimer problem, but you're inducing a different idea to the audience, which is not exactly science related. So what you have to do is find the independent researchers, maybe.
Where would you go look for that?
Elsewhere, other than the expert committee. So basically, I would look for the scientific societies, international societies. I would find the researchers who have published recently in the international journals. Anyway, I have my ways to find them. But once I find them, I try to see critically the report which was published and then see if actually the Alzheimer's research really needs three times more money. If they do, that doesn't mean that the Parkinson's research don't need more money. So
that will be the effect. I mean, it has to be taken from somewhere.
Actually, no. Further on, it's a political decision, and the political decision has to be assumed by politicians. I can say, as a science journalist, that okay, it's true what the expert report said, and it's true that other fields need more money. But in the end, it's a political decision.
But this is a scientist who would tell the government, you should give us more money. Yeah. So this is politics. This is not science. This is politics.
Actually, they ask for more money based on their results and what they try to accomplish. So if what they try to accomplish is actually truth, and you really see a light at the end of the tunnel, then maybe the government should find money, not necessarily from the Parkinson's researcher, but from some...
Yeah. All right. Okay. I'm a little bit worried about Yves because he keeps moving. I'm wondering whether he's going to... You looked like you were ready to move back. No? I could see you kind of... Very close. Okay. Shall we wait another minute? No. Okay. Shall we move on to the next terribly phrased question?
Okay. I have room for one.
Well, something that we'll probably discuss a little bit later is that the mind of a scientist thinks completely differently, in my opinion, to the mind of a politician. They come from two different worlds altogether, again, in my experience. However, I think it adds credibility and objectivity to any scientific argument presented by a science journalist to have critical opinions, whether in favor or against the ultimate idea of the article. It adds value, it adds credibility to the article, and would save time when it comes to procedural and executive issues. Because a politician, as you may know, will take the argument to parliament or to committees, and it'll end up in the bureaucracy of government. So it's better to present a strong argument from the start that has all the elements, even the elements not exactly in favor of the objective of getting more money for the research, so that essentially to try and make it as simple as possible for the politician to sign the check.
Okay, clear.
Okay, thank you. Here's another scenario.
We've heard about this before.
Yes. Your government scraps all funding for gender studies, claiming it is not science. Any relation to actual events in the real world are completely coincidental. Scientists say academic freedom is under attack and they put out a protest petition. Should an association of science journalists officially support this petition? No is on this side, yes is on this side. So think about it. If you were a journalist, or just if there's a journalism association in your country, should they support a petition that calls out the government for restricting academic freedom. yes, go ahead. Sorry, I'm blocking the chairs, but not by design.
There's one doubter. Everyone is sure today. It's interesting. Usually we have a lineup for the three chairs, but.
Okay, some late movers.
Okay, that's three.
Okay, better late than never.
One, and I have one person who says, yes, they should do that.
This is a very easy question, because the government does not know what science is. They are not conducting research, so they should not decide what is science or not. It's no way.
And do you think it is a role of a science journalist to call that?
Yeah, very objective, yes, of course.
Okay.
Okay, does somebody want to answer? Yeah, let's start with the science journalist.
Yeah, I think science journalists, we are not activists. We may report on the topic, we may even report on the fact that government don't know nothing about science, but that will be journalism. We don't have to take a part, and this would be taking a part.
Do you think in practical terms, if you do it, does it create problems for you in your work?
Yes, I think I would stop being independent if I picked a side like this, supporting a petition. I think I would pick a side, and never again people would look at me as an independent journalist.
Okay, right, I have a counter argument here. You're not a journalist, or are you a journalist? It's just important that that's clear.
Well, I do write often different pieces. So I think that one of the big mistakes that science journalists can make, that take part in this both-sidism thing. So, like, there's an argument on both sides. I mean, there might be, but, they are not equal. And, we have seen this often in the 2000s when there was the debate about evolution in the United States. Like, New York Times and other big outlets were trying to, stay in the middle of the debate when there wasn't really a debate. I mean, the question was settled for a while. And I think this is another case where, there isn't really a question. So you are... you can report that there is a debate, but you can clearly say that, these people are right and that the other part is just trying to make a false argument.
Okay, there was someone else who wanted to answer here?
It is actually very interesting why, on the previous question, you are trying to take somebody's part against of staying neutral, and on this question you are saying, science journalists are neutral and we don't want to be involved and we're not activists. Scientists are also... doesn't really have that much of a power, I would say.
What did you feel was taking sides, sorry, in the earlier question?
I mean, on the previous question, when we were talking about financing, I think the same lady mentioned that in this case, it is important to claim what is right and what is wrong, but here, why don't we want to support? If it's your personal opinion as a science journalist, that you agree that this is it's a problem, why not to support a scientist?
Okay, maybe give you a chance to answer quickly. So you said earlier that you should get outside opinion.
Yes, I will answer both, because actually you are touching the same point. As a journalist, I have to report on that. Either if I pick both sides, I don't need to say that both sides have the same weight. I can say that these are the both sides, and this one doesn't make sense, and this one makes sense. I can report on that as a journalist. A journalist doesn't have to have an opinion when he's reporting. I can have my personal opinion as a person, but as a journalist, I won't give my opinion in my piece of work. That's why, as a journalist, I shouldn't be standing in a petition. Because I would take a point as a journalist. As a person, it's something independent.
I mean, we have at least one head of a... go ahead.
Well, I think that that the journalist cannot be truly neutral, neither objective. So I think that we should, in this case, report fairly about what are the government arguments, and about this petition. But I think that we should show our attitude even though we are reporting. And I think that behind all of us are standing some values. So I don't think that we can neutralize them. So that
can I ask a question from here? I'm just curious. It's a little bit like with monogamy, I guess. Should we, just because we are going to fail at it, should we not try? At objectivity,
okay,
I mean?
Okay, I say, I think that we could try to be fair, and but to be objective, okay, we could try, but it's ideal that I don't think it's applicable. Like, you cannot be objective like scientists. I mean...
okay.
Okay.
Let's we have one head of
think about your response.
We have one head of a journalist association here.
I'm going to go to somewhere else because I had
Peter. But let's quickly hear from a head of an actual journalism association. So I'm curious, Science Journalist Association. You would advise your association not to sign.
Okay. So from that point of view, I would first listen to what people say in my association, because that's a tough one. And if you have an association, you don't want to divide your association too badly. And you have to think of the interests of the group, too.
Look, politics.
Yeah, well, that's any group is like that. But on the argument itself, one of the things I would like the people over there to consider is when you're going to write a story, you're going to be attacked on the fact that you have signed a petition, that you have made yourself visible taking sides, and in some way it will weaken your story that you can be attacked on that. And I think as journalists, we should probably restrain from signing petitions or appearing publicly, politically engaged.
Can I just ask one follow-up question? Because I mean, what you're basically saying is you should, even though you aren't objective, you have an opinion on this, you should, the public should know about your opinion, right? That's the difference. I mean, you feel that you want to sign it, but you're not going to sign it because you don't want the public to know. So are you telling me you basically have to pretend to be objective so that people believe you?
So, yeah, so that's a very good point. And it's a difficulty we're constantly dealing with. But of course, I mean, I would document the facts, give the facts, et cetera, et cetera. But I would try and create a situation where my story is not attacked on things that are not relevant to it. I want my story to be there and to be discussed on the facts that are inside. So if I create opportunities for people who will attack it to contradict me on irrelevant things, I feel I weaken the story.
Okay, thanks.
Okay,
sorry, let's
over
hear
here.
From the other side for a second.
So, I think that, sorry. Yeah, so I think that on one side you can report on this issue and be as unbiased and objective as you can be, but on the other hand, when you're, as an organization, I think you're entitled to take stance, because at the end of the day, this is a question about values. And I think that you're not actually losing credibility by not being objective in this case. You're actually gaining credibility because you, as a, every serious organization has a mission statement, and they, in this case, if you do not pick a side, you actually lose credibility. Where are your values? So let's say, It wasn't about scraping funding for gender studies, and let's think of something more preposterous, like, okay, we're eliminating evolution from school, from the curriculum, and introducing creationism. If you, which is obviously anti-science. So if you're not taking a public stance, I repeat, as an organization, not in your news article or feature, or I think you're actually losing credibility.
Quick question, is there a big difference for you for the individual science journalist and the association of journalists? I mean, are you saying that the association should do it, but the individual journalist maybe not?
Well, as an organization, you you have a public profile where your values should be clearly stated. As an individual, your job is to stick to your job. Yeah.
Okay. One more here. I'm just science journalists. I'm very curious about science journalists, because many scientists are actually now raising their fingers. Who are the science journalists who would weigh in at this point? You, I had. I'm going to have a new face here.
maybe in something that's not said yet. I don't think it will help the case much forward if science journalists would promote this petition. Just another aspect.
Okay, that's the a utilitarian argument. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we have
room for a few more.
Go ahead. I'll go here. He wants very much.
I think the critical word here is claiming that it is not science. This is where the problem lies. The government is free to reduce or increase funding to research as its wish. It can say its priorities, priority research, or non-priority research. However, claiming that that exercise is not science is not within the jurisdiction of government. That is a clear violation of the authority of government in interfering in journalism as the fourth authority of the state. This is the critical issue.
Okay, I have one researcher from Hungary who I'm sure you have an opinion about this.
I raise my hand. That would be my point as well. So as a reader, I would be happy to see a science journalist organization to take a stance in fundamental questions like this. When it is about GMO, or any other contested issue, probably I would prefer not to take a stance, but when it is a fundamental principle, I would prefer on the one hand. On the other hand, I would also make a distinction between an individual journalist and the organization. So when the journalist is conducting his or her work, then it would be useful to report on various opinions without stating his or her own opinion. So these are all separate issues. And one principal issue as well. So when it is about fundamental issues, practicality impact doesn't matter. So you might absolutely right that there would be no impact of one more petition, but not to sign a fundamentally important petition, I think it's a wrong decision.
Okay, I have one more question. Are there people from Hungary and on this side? Okay.
That also says something. We have one person here who has listened to all these arguments particularly attentively. Have you made up your mind?
No, I have not.
What argument was persuasive to you? What seems important?
Actually, that's the difficulty, that on both sides there were really persuasive arguments, and that was pretty much what's going on in my head when I was making this decision. So what I was thinking was, very important here that a science journalist must be as impartial as possible. But on the other hand, my personal opinion is very much on that side. So if I'm not a science journalist, but if I were in this case, I would not be able to decide what to do.
Good thing you're not a science journalist, because then you would have to decide. I'll let you get off free for this time. We have one more scenario. Here are a few pictures to set the mood.
Maybe you remember those.
Yes.
So I'll read it. So politicians, celebrities, and scientists all decry fires in the Amazon rainforest, and that happened this summer. And they succeed in drawing attention to deforestation, and which all agree is a major environmental threat, using misleading data and overstating the facts. I'm not saying that they did in this case, although stuff happened. But suppose they did for this particular motion. Should science journalists actually make that the headline when actually scientists are using what do you mean by what? That is the fact that they were using misleading data and that they were not being.
So should the headline of the article be scientists use misleading data? To whatever.
Should the story be on the misleading of the data rather than the fires? Because what's important here? What is your focus?
So this side is no, that side is yes. I think these three chairs are going to go away really fast. Just so, yes. Okay. Any more movement? People are still unsure.
So something like this actually happened. I mean, many, so the four pictures of fires you just saw who were and those were tweeted all around the world. They were not about actual current Amazon rainforest fires. They were basically other fires from the past or from other countries, but they were used all over.
Right, and they were tweeted by people like French President Macron, Leonardo DiCaprio, and even by scientists. So that's the basis for that question.
So the question is that a big story in itself, or is that just a tiny little fact that's on the side, and we should really only talk about the fires? So, do I have one late? Yes, oh, I do.
I see someone moving.
Okay, I start over here.
All right. I am Brazilian, and I am from Manaus, which is a huge city in Brazil, in the heart of the Amazon rainforest. And as a Brazilian, I can tell you with property that this problem with misleading data and misinformation in Brazil is a major problem, because more than half of Brazilian population right now, led by this misleading information and misleading data, they think that what the rest of the world is talking about, how we are close to a tipping point in deforestation in the Amazon, they think that this is a lie, that they are exaggerated, and that these are fake news. And us, as Brazilian people, as having the majority of the Amazon rainforest in our country, we should be more worried about that. So we have this misleading information out there. Our own president is saying that this is nothing to worry about. These other countries, they are just interested in money. They don't care about Brazil. They don't care about deforestation. And this does not give enough credibility to scientists and to people who are really worried and want to do something about it. In the past week, we've had a paper published in Brazil talking about the fires in the Amazon and in the wetlands in Brazil, and what are the problems, the causes, and everything that led to that. And there were some main authors of the article that they requested that they be kept as anonymous author because they are afraid of represalia from the government. And this is something really serious. So, yeah.
Okay, very clear.
So, who hasn't talked? Who wants to, can I just come up and ask if nobody wants? Why are you sitting on this side?
Why am I sitting on this side? Well, basically, I'm nor a journalist, nor a scientist. I'm a student, very young, very tiny. No, I'm here to gain college, actually. I'm creating a model UN club in Jordan. I'm Jordanian, and we tackle problems. So I'm here to gain knowledge, but and the reason I did not move because I was lazy. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna. If you want to sit on the other side, I'm gonna make you get up and go to the other side. Did you want?
No, I don't want to sit. But basically, I think that just the topic is not supposed to be that the journalists are misleading the information. Just the topic should be the Amazon. Like the Amazon is on fire. That's what we really need to focus on. We don't need, okay, I understand the journalists are using like more information. They're talking about this, they're talking about that. But the main topic is that the Amazon is on fire. That's what we need to focus on. So whether you're on the yes side, the no side, all of us in this room are focusing on the fact that the Amazon is on fire.
That's okay. Pretty clear argument why you're sitting
here. Here's another argument.
So my argument is that the basic question is how can we reach the populace, the common people. And if we have to use metaphors like the lung of Earth, which is a complete nonsense, we all know scientifically, and some science journals can actually debunk this problem. But this is the metaphor that actually resonates with the people. And the hard scientific fact would be gigatons of CO2 to the atmosphere, number of species lost and stuff like that. You know, boring stuff. By the third line, everyone just clicks somewhere else. So sometimes, yes, we have to give up some of the scientific integrity. Not us, but the journalists, please.
Well, this is a very provocative statement, and I want to hear from this side. Who's arguing with this? Sorry, I'm going to pass you.
Okay, I will again use the non-precise question that I will say. We can write 100 articles about the forest for the portal, but one of the articles will have a headline on this. And The second question is that we live now in the world of fake news and everything, and our duty as a journalist is to open the eyes of the public and say, okay, there is very serious problem with the fires, but those photos you are sharing are not that fire, and you are misleading the audience.
What are you telling a scientist who says, well, I want to get through to these people, so I use language that's not correct, but it actually works? So
scientists can do that, but journalists can't, because we need to follow facts.
It's hard to argue with that, no? I mean, we have a duty to tell the truth.
Right. So I think that as a journalist, you have to pay attention how journalism works in the age of media and how your article will be shared on social media. So essentially, I think that the main importance here is that, do you want to make that the headline? Because many people will just share your headline, essentially not reading into your paper, like where you say that, oh, well, maybe they overstated the facts. The facts are generally correct, and et cetera. So most of the people, and they will get really upset on this, they will only read that scientists were lying about the Amazon rainforest. And that's, I think, the difficult issue. And this is a hard question, obviously, because it tackles integrity in many ways. But you have to kind of be conscious about this.
I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, if you turn it around, if somebody talks about vaccination, scientists and they lie, then we should put it in the headline?
Lie in what sense? I mean,
well, saying vaccination causes autism, for instance.
It doesn't. Exactly.
Well, I'm not sure. I still gather. Maybe.
So you're saying yes, the scientists lied, but we shouldn't put that in the headline in this case. I'm curious, in another case where scientists like Wakefield says.
So I see.
How do you decide when to put it in the headline?
So as I said, this is a difficult question, but so overstating the facts and fabricating facts from zero, I think those are very, very different situations. So obviously, like, Wakefield fabricated most of his data, and he had like a financial interest in doing whatever he has done. As you can, you could hear from my colleague, I mean, many scientists are emotionally also involved in the climate change debate and et cetera, and many people are struggling to get their message over. But I think overstating the facts, although I wouldn't agree that it's a good thing to do, and I wouldn't do it personally, I think that if you make that the headline, you have to know that many people will just concentrate on that part of the message.
Thanks.
Okay. One remark here.
Okay. I totally agree with the gentleman here. I think as a science journalist, you guys have like critical thinking. So like, if there is a fire in the Amazon, and maybe like it's misleading information from celebrities and maybe politicians, but I don't think it would be from scientists, you should make like a report and talk about it, but not like a headline, because most people, they would just like see their headline or maybe just read one part of the report, and they wouldn't like agree. They would think it's fake news.
I'll take this side for a second. Sorry, you were also...
When we established in 2003 in Brazil the World Federation in San José dos Campos, it was very interesting. So it is, we, the science journalists from abroad, we already that time started to make warning according to the deforestation of the Amazon, and some local science journalists, they defended the Mebiens, you was there, you remember as well, some Brazilian science journalists tried to defend the Brazilian national point of view against us who try to colonizing them and try to make an effort which is against the need for the Brazilian people. So it is sometimes it is not so easy to make a point. Politicians and science journalists. So sometimes science journalists are in some countries influenced by the local politics.
Right, but you're saying we should, we should call out when scientists or politicians or celebrities used basically the wrong data to argue for what maybe is the right thing.
We should give only sign. That is the journalist's role, but that's not more.
Okay, one more here.
Yeah. I would say that the key word here is science journalism. I mean, it's good for journalists to call out the bullshit that politicians do and say, but for a science journalist, that would be a side note in a larger picture. So basically, we should first concentrate on the science and use, in the end, examples, bad examples of how people manipulate science. But this is not the main story for a science journalist, but rather for a, let's say, day-to-day journalist and...
Well, this is a very important distinction you make here, because you basically say science journalists should just write about science and not about the politics of science.
Not just write, should concentrate on science and should make science the key topic of their writing.
Okay, that's a fair point.
Let's hear one more here, and then I think yes, we
have room for a few
okay.
Yes, I think you should. The question here is, what is the news? You start from the fact, it's a fact that the Amazon is burning, and I think that should still be the headline, and then you can bring into the story more nuance and tell that some people are exaggerating, but you have to start from the facts and the news, and that is that the Amazon is burning. Then you can question yourself in the article, if it's a major environmental threat or not.
But now it sounds like you're sitting on the wrong side. Should you? You would make it the headline. I mean, this says yes. Yeah. You would make it that.
Okay, he's on the wrong side. Well, it's getting very warm here, so yes. That's understandable. I have a remark from this side.
This case is a very interesting clash between integrity of science, credibility of journalism, and political responsibility. Just imagine, you know, scientists conclude that, you know, you get global warming of 3.5 degrees. They get it wrong, it's only 3.0 degrees. So if a journalist says, oh, the scientists exaggerate their data, the political consequences, then more people say, oh, well, no, this global warming is not real.
So your case is whatever, I mean, overstatement is good, maybe even, but just don't write about that.
The problem is the political consequence here. Of that reporting.
What's the long-term political consequence of allowing scientists to overstate their case?
It's a difficult one. I mean, I completely agree there are good arguments on this side, and I'm just commenting on this very specific case. And I think in this case, you know, the danger that through that reporting people think, well, the actual threat is non-existent, is the more relevant political consequence.
Clear. Okay, one I have heard from you.
Good evening, everyone. Okay, the idea is that even though we know that it's a noble claim, okay, it's the frustration of Amazon, okay, but does that authorize the scientist, okay, to use misleading data? That means, okay, we are authorizing the using of misleading data to achieve any objective goal. And that reminds me of Machiavelli, interest justifies the means. So I don't think it's good. Okay, that's why, okay, even though it's a noble claim, okay, but it must be mentioned that they are using misleading data.
Okay, totally clear.
Okay, so the Machiavellis are on this side, the non-Machiavellis on that side. Where do you feel more comfortable? Who wants to start? What?
Well, as an environmental scientist, I would say that my heart is on this side, and actually I got persuaded.
Your heart is on that side, and your mind is...
I mean, my mind in the beginning was, as a scientist, we should tell the truth for people, and maybe it is correct. But I got persuaded by the arguments that first we have to solve the problem, and it's...
Well, you got persuaded not to tell the truth as a scientist. We are really killing it in this debate. Sorry. Yes, what about you?
No, I pretty much agree with Stene, what he said. It's a part of the story. And they need to be called out totally, so there's no doubt about that. However, to make it the lead, I do think, or the headline, yes. is to put more flames on a fire that's already, you know, out of control in the sense of the social media environment. And so I just would be careful.
Getting mixed up here with the fire metaphors in a second. So we have two no's, another no?
My basic point is that many articles can be written on that topic. And one of the topics should be written on that, how did it happen? The journalist should go after it. What was the basic point from where it started, and why did they change the data? And this would be a great story.
Okay, I'm counting that as a yes. Very good. Thank you very much. Yes. And we have one more question.
We have one more question. By now the temperature has risen. I'm not sure whether that's because of the discussion or something else. This is one way some people solve this problem. They're seriously taking a stand here. So our final question, and that may be the bigger question. So when politicians go against a research consensus, is it a science journalist's job to defend science?
And as with every question, you can interpret this the way that you feel fit.
And read that well. Does the science journalist has to be the defender of science, or does he have to be the reporter of things that are going on? It's never too late to change.
Yes. And I think you guys have a job here to make. I think we'll start with your arguments. Maybe you can persuade someone. Ah, okay. So let's start on this side. Maybe, I don't think we've heard from you.
I'm not allowed to hold the mic. I think journalists, science journalists, as well as any other journalist, should be as objective as they can. Otherwise, they won't be believable. So they can defend science. I don't know if they should defend science if it's a science that they don't agree with. So I think they have to be objective in either case.
I mean, the question is very specifically about when a politician goes against a research consensus, right? So research consensus is vaccines are safe or climate change is happening, GMOs don't kill you. So in those cases, you still think a science journalist shouldn't really defend the science.
Is there ever a research consensus, though? I mean, even in the climate thing, that you're going to get a number of people, I don't know what the numbers, maybe two or three, but they're going to be, the consensus is never there to begin with, I don't think. And so the science journalists can sort of point that out. They don't have to necessarily agree with the opposite side, but I think they can certainly acknowledge it.
Okay, I'm going to go over here, because what convinced you that you have to sit over here?
I think that the science journalist has to defend the public interest. So in most of the cases, the scientists are on the right side. But if in some cases scientists are on the bad side, we have to not to support scientists in that case.
All right, very clear. Let's give that side.
Yes, let's.
All right, so I will use an example from Brazil again. Imagine this. We've had some major oil spills on Brazil's ocean side, and these oil spills just reached the beaches. So a majority of Brazil ocean side is full of oil, and some scientists took some samples from fishes from these areas and showed that these fishes were contaminated. Therefore, people should not be eating these fishes because they are contaminated. Of course, they are in touch with oil. And then our president, Bolsonaro, went on TV and he said that this is a lie, that this is just a big communist scam from the opposition, trying to contradict him and ruin his reputation. And he said that fish are smart. They see the oil and they swim to the opposite side. Therefore, we should not be concerned and we could eat this fish because the fish are smart and run away from it. How can a science journalist be neutral about this kind of thing? I mean, this is mental.
So, you shouldn't be neutral. By the way, there seem to be a lot of Marxist conspiracies in Brazil at the moment. It's quite surprising.
I'm shopping for a good argument to be on this side. So,
go shopping.
I don't know, but in my life, several times I experienced that scientists thought that we, science journalists, we are an extended hand of science. And I was always stressed that science journalists, as well a good journalist in general, should have to be totally independent. And we have to work according our best views and best meanings. Sometimes we can be on the side of a
personal scientist or a group of scientists, but sometimes not. So it is not the goal or the task of a journalist to defend or to attack something. As you mentioned very well, we have to report, and that's it.
If I may throw in something, I mean, is this the research consensus a final thing, or might that shift toward some place totally else?
Well, if there is a science consensus, like in different subjects, then we should have to report about the consensus. There is a different thing if we are writing an editorial, but if you write a news story, that you should have to be neutral.
Slowly, people are coming. I can see. I can see change. Yes.
In history, science consensus was also at one time phrenology, or thinking that women are inferior to men. So, what would you support? Do you support science in that case, for example?
Do we have any science journalists from the 15th century?
He's challenging the women on this side now. He's really challenging the women on this side. So. Anyone over there? Yes, that's two.
I think we don't have those either.
I haven't. Yes.
Can I ask you guys, are you science journalists or political journalists?
You're asking the other side, right?
Because it's a common sense. Probably like most of the researchers, they agree in that case. So they are right, and the political side is wrong. So if you don't take a side, because scientists they have proofs that they are right. It's common sense in research area. If you don't pick a side,
But why are you asking whether they are science journalists or political science? I mean, what's the difference here?
Because if they don't pick a side in that case, I think they are more like political. Not like they are not reporting like what they should report.
And you should not be political. You should not have actual political parts in your story.
Yeah, I think so. I think you shouldn't.
Interesting. You changed sides, well, more or less from the middle. Why?
Yeah, his argument really convinced me because, like you were saying, if we have a research consensus, probably that would be the side to go. But I prefer to stick to the point that as a science journalist, and I want to state that a science journalist is above all a journalist, we should not pick the side. And maybe what it seems to be a consensus now, maybe not be in the day after, I don't know. And if we don't have the mission to defend science, we have to report on that, and maybe during our reporting we are defending science, but that is not our mission to defend science.
I have three quick remarks here. One.
So my focus is on research consensus, and if you don't defend science when there is a research consensus, so if you choose to stay silent, then you did make a choice. By not defending, you didn't remain impartial, you chose a side.
Okay, your point is taken.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what this word defend means. There's a key there. I would report, and in that report I would state the consensus. I don't know if that would be called defending or not.
Okay, one more.
They know easy targets, yes.
It's my point, I just want to clarify it more. You don't need to defend science just to pick a side. I'm defending science, you can defend it with the facts and with reporting on the facts of the researchers and the facts of the politician. And if you collide scientist and politician, you will defend science with that.
Objective journalism is basically defending science in this case.
Okay.
Yeah. So, do you want to answer that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're just making our case for us. It's really wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much.
No. You can use all the help you can get.
Yeah. Okay, you have, is it the job to defend science? This is not what journalists are hired to do, to defend or attack anyone. And so, yes, the science journalist is not silent at all. The science journalist is showing all the facts and presenting them and knows the difference between truth and not truth, but is just presenting them, not defend, not to be a partisan in a battle.
Can I just ask, because somebody made the distinction between a science journalist and a political journalist. Do you see that?
Okay. I have been both. I was a political journalist and a science journalist, and there is no difference. You report the facts. You may know a little bit more about one thing than another, but that's the only thing.
Yeah. Science journalists are nicer than political journalists in general, right?
Two quickies on this side.
No, there's absolutely no doubt. If you don't choose from the beginning to support facts and science, you are very political yourself. You have to support what is true.
Okay, this one.
I think if Galileo was sitting with us today, he'd be really very disappointed.
Where would he sit? Where would Galileo sit?
Here, of course.
Okay, over there.
No, go ahead. I think you have more.
Okay.
So my point would be, like, science is really about the scientific method, and you know, you have to make sure that your readers understand the scientific method. And if you're not standing up for science, you're not standing up for scientific method either. So if you present a politician's argument which is not based on the scientific method, I mean, if they make a point which is completely missing the scientific method, then, you know, you are being political because you are not taking the side as.
So is the scientific method part of the mission of a science journalist?
I do think so. Yeah.
Okay.
You're defending one degree.
No, I'd just like to say that defending, I think Yves asked, what was defending? Well, reporting is defending, because your job of reporting is actually the defense. And if you don't report a lie, your silence is allowing that to exist and to promote in society. So your obligation as a journalist to report is defending the truth. That is my opinion.
But you're saying report the lie and say it's a lie.
Yeah, not allow that a research consensus like the flat earthers can be promulgated by politicians and other people in society. You have to stop those lies. And journalists are the ones who have to call out on the truth and make sure that they report, which is defending the truth.
That was all a right. Passionate argument.
We report on the truth, but that is not the question there. The question there is this: our job is to defend science.
We heard something about the scientific method. Should science journalists be believers in the scientific method?
We don't have to be believers. This is not a religion. So we have to stick to the truth. And your point is, if we are not defending science, we are silent. That is not an option. We are reporting on the truth. And that doesn't mean we are defending science.
Okay, I have room for one more here.
I'd like to stress out that in a democracy, it's
you can stress out all you want.
It's perfectly sensible to go into a research consensus. So I think you prefer a technocracy above a democracy.
Ooh, okay.
Oh.
And we have come to the end.
We are already in overtime.
I'm going to ask you to, which side were you most attracted to?
Both.
people are afraid.
I think it depends on the issue. For example, in environmental issues and health issues, it should be definitely that we have to defend the science. On the other side, at each issue, we have to decide asking several people. It's not black and white.
Okay, last one.
It's actually very interesting to see how the same journalists are fighting inside themselves, are they should be natural or not. And as they're fighting between each other and themselves, I'm also fighting. I didn't pick up the side, to be honest.
Okay, I think we need to have a follow-up debate at some point because we haven't completely covered it.
I want to thank all of you for participating, because I think you did a wonderful job, actually, yes. Of all. And let me quote John Berko here, because he's one of my heroes. Thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.